Okay, good morning. First, I would like to thank Jean-Marie Tarascon for the invitation to come and talk about the safety study we've done as part of the U.S. Department of Energy's program on advanced technology development program. The outline of my talk is to share with you some of the work we've done on the impact of battery materials on safety. As Yves mentioned, there is a number of materials in the battery. You have the cathode, the anode, the electrolyte, the separator, and so on. So the question is, which one is very important within the system from the chemistry point of view? And then I will share with you some of the ways of mitigating the thermal runaway, chemistry-wise, to try to enable lithium-ion batteries for automotive application. I'd like to start with this figure that shows the 2009 global human activity energy flow. What it says is that for applications that are not transportation, either residential, commercial, or industrial, all these rely on a number of sources of energy, from hydro all the way to oil. The transportation, unfortunately, rely on only oil, but the story doesn't end up here. Half of that energy is wasted. So not only we are relying on one source, but we waste half of it. Now, you can imagine with China and India coming in, China now is the second largest consumer of oil, the situation will become unsustainable. So clearly, the electrification vehicle is the answer to this chart. When we talk about electrification, battery become very important. And all of us agree now that lithium-ion batteries are very attractive to at least enable the initial vehicles. So the reason why lithium-ion is very attractive because they have the highest volumetric energy and gravimetric energy among all existing systems. In another word, you can make them smaller, lighter, but yet very energetic. The other things which is very attractive is, as you can see, the pole here is very large, which means you have a variety of cathode and anode to select from. You can look at systems that provide power or systems that provide energy. You can look at high voltage, low voltage system. So there is a tremendous amount of opportunity to enable this system for vehicle application. Now, unfortunately, there are still barriers that is still remaining to be addressed. The first one is calendar life. This is the life of the battery, real life of the battery in a vehicle. The target is 15 years. This is USABC, United States Advanced Batteries Consortium requirement, but the Japanese are targeting 10 years, which is more practical. The cost for hybrid electric vehicles is $20 per kilowatt. In other words, you need the whole battery pack for I would say 25 kilowatt hours, about $500. For a plug-in, we need $250 per kilowatt hour. These are very important to expand the adoption of this vehicle. And obviously, safety is very critical. You need a battery that is abuse tolerant to overcharge, crash, high temperature exposure, and so on. So among the chemistries which are now being applied in vehicles, you have the spinel, the lithium manganese oxide. I think it's been used now in a Chevy Volt, blended with the NMC, and also in a Nissan Leaf. You have the NMC, which is coming strong. A number of companies are trying to enable it now for hybrid and plug-in. You have the NCA, the nickel cobalt aluminum, perhaps the most studied of all these chemistries. It's been studied by Saft and Toyota for many, many years, almost 15 years, and a lot of information is already available here. And you have the iron phosphate because of its so-called safety advantages. It's been looked at by the Chinese and some of the American makers. So I'll try to comment on the safety of all these materials. Now, again, as I said, this is some of the pictures that shows even consumer electronic batteries. These are 18650, small batteries, 2.5 amp hours, using the conventional lithium cobalt oxide. Fortunately, the lithium cobalt oxide is not considered for hybrid or plug-in because of the instability of the cost of cobalt, and the cost is quite high. So clearly we have to, when we look at the system I showed you before, safety become very critical. So I'm going to start talking about from the cathode side, and I'm going to use an example. This is a chart that shows the lithium ion, a little different. You have the cathode. In this case, I selected the layered NCA, nickel cobalt aluminum. Obviously, when you remove lithium, you oxidize a nickel. Nickel 4 plus in an oxide form does not exist. In IO2 does not exist. So you have an immediate reduction. So that's something you have to worry about. Then on the anode side, because lithiated carbon is very reactive, and then you have a passivation film, which is very important. The passivation film stability is very critical, and I will show you that this film can cause safety issue as well. And on the top of that, you have flammable electrolyte, mostly organic electrolyte that can catch flame easily. So you can think, even though you fix the problem at the safety inside the battery, when there is a leak and spark, you have a problem right there. And then you have the separator, PU, for instance, which tend to melt at about 130 degrees C. So when it melts, it can easily oxidize. And there is an energy associated with that as well. Now let's start with the cathode. I take an example of the NCA because it's been well studied. What I did here is, as Eve mentioned, a cathode is made of an active material, which is this one here, a binder to bind the particles to a current collector, and a carbon conductive. So what I did here, we taken a charged powder. The way we did it is taking the powder and put it in a mesh and charge it slowly to get the same capacities as an electrode. And then in another experiment, we take the charged electrode, a powder with a binder only. So we can look at the reactivity of the binder with the charged cathode. And in another experiment, we taken the charged active material with carbon additives to see if potential oxidation, for instance. And finally, we're taking the electrode. From the electrolyte side, to react all this, we use the conventional electrolyte, ECMC base, with the lithium hexafluorophosphate salt. And then we just use ECLON mixed with all this and see what is happening. And take an EMC solvent as well and salt. The question is try to pin which one is very reactive among all this. And so we're on the DSC, differential scanning calorimetry. But before that, we've taken the active material, powder, and then heat it up to see what is happening at high temperature. So you can see we have a TGGS mass experiment. What happens is when you start getting some weight loss, we detected that around 200 degrees C, slightly before 200 degrees C, there's some weight loss, and most of it is oxygen. And that makes sense because in this material, when you remove lithium, this is, as I said, is a nickel 4 plus, is very unstable, so when you heat up, you have an immediate reduction and release of oxygen. So the question now, you have a source of oxygen at the cathode, what that oxygen do? There is a potential oxidation of all these elements, and which one is very important? That's the question we ask. So we start with the EC and the powder. So there is no binders or active carbon. And as you can see, this is a normal differential scanning calorimetry. You melt the EC around 50. And then you have a reaction that starts exactly at about slightly less than 200. The overall energy is about 1,000 joules per gram. And we're on the X-ray of the final material was nickel oxide. So we do have confirmation of a reduction of this material. Now you notice exactly at around 200 when you start generating oxygen, the reaction starts. So it is an oxidation of the solvent here. We did the same things with the MC. We get almost the same energy and the same thermal signature. And the final material is exactly the same as well. We did it with the charged powder and the oil electrolyte. Now we have the salt as well. And you can see clearly we have exactly the same thing. Energy-wise, it's almost the same. So clearly here, we have an oxidation of solvent coming from the oxygen released by the from the oxide. And we look at the electrode now that has everything. We got exactly the same thing as well. So the main reaction at the cathode here is the oxidation of solvent. Regardless of the choice of solvent, it doesn't matter, you get the same energy. Now we also looked at the excess electrolyte in aluminum foil, and the idea here, the electrolyte will hydrolyze and form HF, and you form a reaction of aluminum fluoride, which we've seen, but the amount of energy involved there is very, very tiny. It cannot account for that big energy fund when we mix the electrode with the electrolyte. And we were confirmed that there is some aluminum fluoride formation on the surface of the aluminum. We also looked at the powder, charged powder, with excess of salt. And you can see there is a melting of the salt around 200, and then you have a decomposition. So the reaction to happen at the electrode here is nothing happening. So the overall energy of the decomposition is still very small as well. And we did the same thing with the binder. We're taking the charged powder with the binder, and clearly you have a decomposition of bond that happened at very high temperature. So the point here is that Most of the reaction with binders and carbon additives are very minor. The key is the oxidation of the solvent from the oxygen generated by the oxide. Now, obviously, when you take that conclusion, cathode that generate more oxygen will create a problem. And to confirm that, we run an interesting experiment in conjunction with the Sandia National Lab as part of the DOE program. We taken an 18650 cell. This is a real cell, very balanced, but it's only 1 ampere. So you can select the core, make it bigger or smaller. And so we can have similar energy out of these cells. But they have different cathode, as you can see, the commercial lithium cobalt oxide, the NCA, the nickel cobalt manganese system, the spinel and the iron phosphate. They have the same electrolyte, the same carbon. The only difference is the cathode. And clearly you can see the commercial lithium cobalt oxide are the one that have very low onset temperature. It means the activation energy is low. So reaction is very fast, and the overall heat is very significant. This is an ARC test, an accelerated calorimetry test. The NCA, these are all charged to 4.2 volt. You see is the second one, then the NMC, the energy drop, and of course the spinel and the iron phosphate. Are the ones that are very, from that point of view, fairly safe. Now, the NCA, if you operate at 4 volt, the energy that can be generated will be almost similar to the MC. So if you cap your voltage lower with the NCA, you can get fairly safe here, but you get a hit on energy because you cannot withdraw more lithium at these voltages. So from this, the conclusion is that the iron phosphate obviously is safer because when you blow this, you can see the energy out of the iron phosphate is smaller than the spinel. Of course, you go this way, lithium cobalt oxide, which is a commercial battery for consumer electronics, is less safer. And the reason is shown here. If you look at the NCA, for instance, at around 200 degrees C, the reaction start. And the energy out of the reaction depends on how much oxygen is released. If you look at the spinel or the NMC, the reaction start much higher, so you can see we have a delay of the onset temperature, and the overall heat is proportional to the amount of oxygen released. With the iron phosphate, we don't see any release of oxygen. The spinel have some, but at very high temperature. So, as I said, in the case of the nickel cobalt aluminum, when you heat up, this is just heating up to see what is happening to the structure. You move to the nickel oxide phase, you generate quite a bit of oxygen. With the NMC, you've seen better performance, and the reason because you have a transformation to a spinel structure. So the amount of oxygen is much less, and that's the oxidation reaction is less severe than in the case of the NCA, for instance. In the case of the iron phosphate, you don't have any loss at all, almost. And the reason because you have a transformation of the structure from the iron phosphate pristine material to a kind of a hexagonal phase. So you pretty much conserve all your oxygen. You just transform the structure from orthorhombic to a hexagonal phase. So now, as I said, of course, the iron phosphate and spinel are safe, but unfortunately, they are low energy. Now, the trend now is going toward high energy. Electric vehicle require high energy. Plug-in require high energy. These are very nice systems for hybrid electric vehicle where the power is very important, and both of them show outstanding power capability. They are used now for 100 miles electric vehicle, but these are not attractive numbers. You know, you have to be at 200-300 miles to make the electric vehicle viable, for instance. Or plug-in, you need at least 40 miles plug-in, because at least in the United States, about 78% of the consumer or commuter commute within 40 miles. So, to enable the layered phase, which has much higher potential for energy because, as you can see, and as Eve mentioned, we draw only half of the lithium. If you go higher in voltage, you can draw more, and you can get some serious energy out of this system. So one way is to protect the surfaces because most of the reaction initially start at the surface and propagate to the bulk. So here is an example where we take an aluminum fluoride coating. This is not really complete coating because we use a co-precipitation. So you have a dispersion of nanoparticulate that are almost close to each other. And obviously with the SEM, this is basically a tiny 20 nanometer. So the idea why we use aluminum fluoride, you need something that can act as a barrier. So you have aluminum that does not oxidize, say it's 3+ when you go higher in voltage, and then you have fluorine. So aluminum fluorine bond is very strong, you can't break it up. And then you don't have the attack of HF. If you use an oxide, you'll end up with a reaction with HF that can disintegrate that film. So once you do that, now you have a film, if you want, that has very high activation energy. You need to delay, it will lead at least to the delay of the reaction. So that's what happened exactly. This is the pristine material. As you can see, the onset temperature is earlier, so the reaction can take place earlier. By adding this tiny film, you see the reaction has been delayed almost by 100 degrees C. It will give the separator the opportunity to shut down, or the makers of batteries to basically design a safer system around this. So, and since you are protecting the interface, as you know, reactivity starts even at around 50 degrees C, which is one of the requirements for calendar life. You will protect your system against interfacial reactivity, and as consequence, you can end up with some improvement in performance as well, at high temperature especially. This is an example where we can see we operate the NCA at 4.3 volt. You can get better result at high temperature than the non-coated system, for instance. Now, you notice here the energy is still very high, because once you deplete your coating, of course you expose your material to, most of your material will be exposed to reaction. Another way to delay the reaction and reduce the energy is to do this. This is an interesting concept. It's a functional material where we take an NCA base, a nickel cobalt manganese with large concentration of nickel to give us the energy. We put it in the bulk through a co-precipitation process. This is a continuous process. And then at one point, we start changing the concentration of nickel down and increasing the concentration of manganese up. So we try to populate the system with manganese rich to allow for stability. So this is a bifunctional system. The bulk will give us the energy. The outer layer composition will give us the stability for safety and performance. And here is an example when you do a microtome of the particle. You do a cross-section. You can see you have an interface here. And you have the bulk, which is mostly nickel-rich. And then at this point, you start reducing the nickel and increasing the manganese. Now, the reason why we did this, because if you use two different compositions in a core share configuration, you end up with two volume changes, and eventually you get a gap between the interface here. By using a gradient concentration change, you slowly reduce, you slowly evolve the nickel down and the manganese up, so the overall volume change is very small. But the impact on safety is very important here. You can see this is the NCA base in case we use a manganese instead of aluminum. See, the onset temperature is low, the overall reaction. And then by adding the gradient on the top of this, you see we delay the reaction significantly and the overall heat becomes smaller. So these are type of material that can enable high energy based system for the next generation electric and plug-in. And as I said, because you have an excess of manganese at the surface, you improve your performance. And here is an example that shows actually when operating at about 4.3 volt here, you can get almost 210 milliamp hour per gram out of this system. So you pop your energy quite a bit. Obviously, when you do that without protection, the capacity drops very, very quick. With the gradient material, you stabilize it because you have a manganese rich that is very stable. This is an example, for instance, that shows how to address the safety on the cathode side. Now, I'd like to move to the anode. Well, these are the possible mechanisms. So the main reaction at the cathode is due to the oxidation of solvent by... I have to go fast, I guess. See, I have a lot of figures. So you can read. Basically, the main reaction is the oxidation of solvent by the oxygen from the oxide. Now, on the anode, the curiosity starts when we run a test on a power cell, a 2.4 amp hour olivine cell. It went actually on a thermal runaway and damaged our arc. So the question, we have an iron phosphate that is very stable, but yet we get a thermal runaway here. So we start looking at the anode, what is happening at the carbon. So the carbon, as you can see, we did the initial DSC. First thing we did is we charge and discharge the carbon. We form a passivation film and then run a DSC. There is a tiny heat that starts around 100 degrees C. It's very small, 73 joules, for instance. Then if you leave the lithium when you charge, you have a continuous reaction. A lot of people focus on this reaction to happen at 300 degrees C, the cathode around 200. I'm not worried about this, really. But this continuous reaction starts very early and is very continuous. And this could be an issue if you have a high surface area carbon. So what happened here is you form a passivation film. When you heat, you decompose it, you generate some heat, and then you have the intercalation of lithium to the surface to form another one. what we call a secondary passivation film. And you have a continuous death until the stage of the carbon become very low, very high. Let's see, 12 or 14. So it become more like graphite. So the formation and breakdown of the passivation film could be energetic enough to blow up the battery. And we confirm through the gazing that we have similar passivation film like the initial one. The way we did it, we take in a cell, we charge it and discharge it, remove the gas, and heat it up to 100 degrees C to form that secondary passivation film. And look at the gazing, is exactly similar to the initial passivation film. So we have a formation of secondary passivation film. So here on the carbon side, that breakdown and formation can cause a safety problem that we shouldn't ignore. Now, we were able actually to determine the energy out of that passivation film breakdown, taking two DSC capsules. We run a full scan to determine the thermal signature. The other one, we just heat it in a furnace until here and bring it back to the DSC to get the final thermal signature. And the difference gives us fairly significant heat. Remember, the cathode is about 1,000. This is 507 for a fairly low surface area carbon. So if you use a high surface area carbon like carbon fiber, you can see the heat become almost similar to the cathode NCA. So clearly, one has to be careful selecting carbons as well. And now here you may think that we have two types of carbons, so morphology is different, so maybe there is an impact on safety when you use morphology. If you have round edge, surface reaction are much less than if you have, for example, edges that are high surface reactivity. So what we did in collaboration with Hitachi Chemical, we have them done make carbons exactly the same way, same precursor. The only difference is the surface area or particle size. And you can see the one that had smaller particle size, high surface area, shows significant heat. So clearly here, to address the safety, you really have to go low surface area because of this breakdown and formation of that passivation film, which happened at the surface of the carbon. Now, here is a way of actually improving the safety by just doing a soft carbon coating, and this is becoming more of an industry trend. When you do a soft carbon coating on amorphous carbon coating, you reduce your surface area significantly on the same material by almost half. And because of that, the overall heat generated between 70 and 200 become much smaller. So not only you can enable the use of propylene carbonate because you don't have the exfoliation if you have amorphous carbon at the surface, but also you can significantly impact the safety of the material. Now, of course, as I said, most of it is passivation film, and Eve has stressed the importance of that, the stability of that passivation film. Now, most of it, those passivation come from the reduction of the electrolyte during the initial charging, but you can actually make your own passivation film. That would be better. Now, at Argonne, we take advantage of the supercomputer to try to determine through a quantum modeling, the ionization energies and redox potential of a number of material, and look at how they reduce or polymerize at the surface of carbon. And here is one example, which is a tetrafluoro oxalate of phosphate, for instance. Through density functional theory, it shows it has very, very linear film formation at the surface of carbon. And by doing that, now we delay that reaction significantly. You can see the conventional system started at 100, you have plenty of heat generated. With this one, it takes almost 175 to decompose. So the overall heat in this area has been done by using a tiny amount of material additive. So here's one example. Obviously, if you improve your surface protection, you get also some benefit when it comes to performance. This is an example of carbon MCMB that's been using different concentration of additive at 55 degrees C, we age it for 100 degrees C within CNE capacity, for instance. Not only we improve the safety, but we can also improve significantly the performance as well. I'm going to show you a video of a 20 amp hour NMC cell, graphite without an additive. Hopefully it will work. Okay, so you have a nail penetration. And you can see you have a lot of flame coming, gases coming up, and then you have a swelling of the pouch, and eventually you see some red because the internal temperature went up. Now, with the additive, exactly the same chemistry, we run a nail penetration. It's a very large cell for EV application. You can see there is some gases, but because you suppress that significant reaction, you make a significant impact on a real cell. Now, for the sake of time, I have to move on. This is a pack, actually, that was by an industrial partner. We have a 15-meter drop. There's a pack here, and then they drop it. It has the chemistry of additive and NMC. And as you can see, when it dropped completely, you have a spark, but nothing happened. This is a full pack. I'm going to stick. Now, on the LTU, of course, as I said, you can select a stable SEI, or you can select an anode that does not require a passivation film. And LTU is one of them, the lithium titanium oxide. So here's an example of an LTU that we made at Argonne. It actually cycled very well at high temp, you can basically charge it and discharge within 1 minute. You can cycle it well with the spinel without having the issue of the manganese dissolution here because you are at high voltage. But I would like to show you this video of a crazy engineer from an industrial partner who take a 6-amp-hour HEV cell and decide to do his own nail, basically abuse the cell by himself using real nail, and hopefully it will work. Just to show you that if you address the anode safety, you can make a mesh safety here. Here is it. So he basically poked that cell. You can see there is evaporation of the electrolyte. And this is a very energetic cell because it's 6 amp hour. You've seen those computers. It's a 2 amp hours when you get burning, see. So when we're talking about safety, basically the bottom line is not only the cathode. The anode play a big role, and the full system design as well is very critical. So for the sake of time, I'm going to skip this and this, and I will show you. You can also improve the safety by designing solvent that does not oxidize. That would be the best way. If you don't oxidize the solvent, then you are in good shape. And here is an example of siloxane that we developed at Argonne. This is a polymer, but you can make silanes, a single molecule. We have a single silicon, one single silicon, and you have ethylene oxide with 3 oxygen. You can get a conductivity is very similar to the conventional electrolyte. And you can see when you do a DSC, this is the conventional electrolyte, the other one does not oxidize. So by doing that, it has very good voltage tolerance, cycle well with the NCA at 4.2 volt. But the advantage, not only it doesn't oxidize, but it actually self-extinguishes. You take a flame on it, it catch flame, and then immediately stop. And if you do it with the conventional electrolyte, you can see you have a propagation of flame. So that's an issue. That brings me to the last point. I'm sorry, maybe I don't have time. How much time I have? 2 minutes, okay. Is to use additives. Phosphazine is one of them. Now, you don't have additives. Usually one of the advantages is you use small amount. It does not affect the performance of design of the cell. And phosphate, for example, is an example. We use two types of phosphate, ethoxy pentafluoro or phenoxy pentafluoro. The reason why we use them because the idea is not only to prevent flame within the cell, but also when they evaporate. So the advantage of here, you have one that evaporate at about 120, which is similar to most of the organic linear carbonate, and one of them evaporate about 240, which is most of cyclic one. So when they go together, you can get the advantage of non-flammability when there is a spark and venting. That's the key point. They do have, when you add, basically these are non-flammable, you put them at 5.8%, you can see they become non-flammable. There's nothing happening when you put in a burner. They have very no flash point if you go 9% or higher, and they have very high oxygen index. But obviously, this is my last thing. If you use a conventional organic electrolyte and use, this is a test that was done in Sandia, actually. This is basically a hot block test, basically a spark ignition test. You have an 18650, you heat it up, and you have gases coming out, electrolyte. You have spark around, so as you can see, when will catch flame. And this you cannot prevent. You really cannot prevent because you can do a lot within the cell, but when it vent, you are on the mercy of. Now, if you do a blend of additive, phosphate base, and you can see the spark here, you have a heating. So now you have not only the solvent coming out, but also these additives coming out, which are non-flammable as well. Nothing is happening. Eventually the cell will vent. So So the temperature is increasing and the cell is getting much hotter. So you evaporate, vent most of the gases out there. So, okay, so my conclusion is I've shown you that the cathode choice is very important. Cathode that generate oxygen are very likely to cause an issue with thermal runaway. Clearly, the continuous breakdown and formation of the SCI, the conventional one at least, can actually lead to a thermal runaway depending on the surface area of carbon. You can address that by additives to stabilize the interfaces. We have show you the protection of the cathode at the surface or functionality of the cathode can improve the safety. I didn't touch the redox shuttle because of no time. And this is very important. Developing solvents that are resistive to oxidation can actually enable wide range of cathode material. And that's something hopefully Michel Armand can touch on it later. With that, thank you very much.